also a monster truck rally in East Rutherford, New Jersey, inspired Catherine Ryan to send this post to our new crowdsourcing project, Your Uncommon Economic Indicator. She writes, "My husband and son got free tickets to the Monster Jam Monster Truck Rally and discovered an uncommon sign of the times. The trucks all had evil-sounding names." Well, this is not new. We know this about truck rallies, right? Gravedigger, El Toro Loco, Medusa, and I'm guessing this was a new addition, The Broker. It was greeted with a mixture of boos and cheers. It was apparently no match for the others as The Broker went belly up like the economy on its first attempt to jump a pile of cars. Attempts to bail it out and get it restarted were unsuccessful. It could not even drive out of the arena and had to be moved with a giant forklift. The Broker. But is the term broker now a job title to be sneered at? Do you think that they put it on that truck to get that response? So we're going to do a call in here based on our uncommon listeners' uncommon experience at the Monster Truck Rally with the Uncommon Economic Indicator. See the photo, by the way, at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. They did snap a cell phone picture of the Monster Truck with the name Broker on the side at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. But we want to find out if those of you who work in the financial sector are discovering that others perceive you differently than they used to before this whole mess that we have gotten into. So do you work in the financial sector and find that people are not so kind as they used to be when they find out what you do for a living? Tell us how you feel you are being perceived in this economy. If you are a broker, if you are a financial analyst, if you do or did work in a bank or on Wall Street in any way, give us a call, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. What about your self-perception? What about your own idea of what it means to be a broker, what it means to be a banker? Has that changed? 212-433-WNYC. Are you a hedge fund manager or an investment officer? Are you noticing you get fewer invitations to meet up with friends? Are you on the receiving end of rude comments or outright accusations when people at parties you go to find out what you do or did? 212-433-WNYC. And what about if you're in college or just getting out and can't find a job in that sector after getting an MBA or whatever? Another post on Uncommon Economic Indicators is from somebody who says a lot of his friends who expected to get out of college and go right to Wall Street are now going for things like Teach for America. Does this sound like you? Does this sound like people you know? Is this not just because you can't find a job in the sector, but because your perception of what it means to be in that sector is changing? Call us. Tell us how the crashing economy has affected your relationships with coworkers, friends, even self-perception, if you are a monster truck named Broker. 212-433-WNYC. And Rachel in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Rachel.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I'm a student and I work for a financial advisor. Uh-huh. And my fellow students, who are all scrambling for jobs, posting resumes, and completely nervous because they have no experience, they're looking at me like, what am I even doing? I have no business in the business. And they kind of look at me a little more with disdain now.
What do you say?
I say that I have made a commitment and I have to work, and I'm in the same boat as everyone else. I actually want to go into journalism, so I'm really there with everyone.
Another part of the economy where there'll be no jobs.
Exactly.
I'm just kidding. Rachel, thanks a lot. Mm-hmm. Jack in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jack.
How you doing?
Good.
Listen, I had a very interesting experience. I worked at a very major firm for 30 years, I basically decided I was going to retire, so I did. And fortunately, I missed the last year of this. And last night, I got a phone call from a cousin of mine who was in distress, and she said to me, you know, you used to work at Goldman Sachs. I shouldn't have said that. Sorry about that. It's because of people like you that were in this position. And I said, look, I had nothing to do with it. So it's interesting how the hostility that's coming out of this. Now, maybe it's because of that particular firm, but I think it's more about the business, the kind of money people were making.
Did "I had nothing to do with it" satisfy her at all?
I don't think so. Maybe for the moment, but I still think there's a lot of people out there have resentment for people who made a lot of money or made any money for that matter and lost other people money. And there's no, I had a big discussion with someone last night about what Obama's doing. How do you pay these people who, one guy makes a lot of money, the rest of the firm loses money, shouldn't he be compensated? It's a very difficult question, and I think that the industry has got a lot of self-searching to do. And trying to figure out what the next step is.
And I guess you could say, since you did work for Goldman Sachs, hey, I worked for the company that actually didn't have to get taken over by the taxpayers.
Yeah, but they did accept money.
They did.
And so as a result, you know, there are people who are, you know, what do you do with the guy, with the trader who makes an enormous amount of money for the firm, but then it's lost someplace else? How do you compensate people like that? I mean, they do a service. Having said that, they're not making a good a product. They're, so a lot of people think that they're just skimming off of the economy. And it wasn't that way years ago. And, you know, there was, in fact, people who did things for others, and they really needed the investment services. And I still think they do, but I don't think they – I think they look at it with a jaundiced eye now.
Jack, thanks for calling in. Keep
you're
listening.
Welcome.
Mervin in Manhattan. You're on WNYC. Hello. Hi, Merv.
Hi. How are you doing
okay.
today? I don't. There is no time on the radio for my long song and dance, so I won't give it. One is from the, from the 70s to the 90s, the average person did not get ahead economically. Also, we were told by leaders that you can get something for nothing. You don't have to pay taxes. And third, I was a credit manager of a company in New York City for almost 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
I had to do due diligence on the credit that I approved. I was authorized by my firm up to a credit line of $250,000. That is to say, I could sign off on a customer's order if it was $250,000 without getting a co-signature. But I had to do due diligence before mm-hmm. I did it. And every year, the company I worked for would audit my credit decisions. They would look at my credit files, and they would say, does this credit file warrant a $250,000
line? So you're
line?
Saying the people who today do what you did
well,
weren't doing the same due diligence?
I don't know what they were doing or not doing, but the banks that lent the money to those subprime mortgages, and also the banks that are giving people a credit line of $15,000 on a credit card and asking them to pay back at $100 a month,
mm-hmm.
are doing the wrong thing.
Yes.
They led, in other words, they made you buy. They also advertised like crazy for those to remortgage a house.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the advertising that goes on to encourage people to be careless with their finances. People don't advertise unless it works.
And Mervin, I'm going to leave it there. And by the way, apropos of his call, we're going to have a weekly guest for the month of February, Anya Kamenetz from Generation Debt, who is going to give personal advice, but she's also kind of a watchdog over the credit industry. Our January weekly guest was Lee Sander, head of the MTA. We're going to have Anya Kamenetz this month, who keeps an eye on the credit card industry and other kinds of credit, so she'll have a lot to say about that, and she'll take your calls starting Thursday. Your calls right now on if you worked on Wall Street or worked in a bank, are you being perceived differently? 212-433-WNYC, differently than you were before, say, September 15th, 212-433-9692. Andrew in Manhattan, you work in hedge funds, Andrew?
Yeah, I do. I have a company that helps hedge funds raise capital.
And?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, for a long time as an entrepreneur in the sector, I've liked the hedge fund community because there are entrepreneurs. There are people who left the banks to start their own little businesses, and so that attracts a certain type of person. But what I've found in the last, you know, 6 to 12 months or so is that the ego has kind of been sucked out of the industry. So
yeah.
It's actually been much more reasonable to deal with people.
Isn't that interesting? And it's a high ego industry in general, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
You have to really believe in yourself to go out and you're going to be the one who's going to make all the money and make the right calls on what to invest in and what to sell and everything like that, right?
Right, and not play politics to try to climb up the ladder and get into the executive suite. That's absolutely right. And then on the flip side, dealing with people who don't, I mean, people, no one really understands what the word hedge fund means, and it's been 4 years of kind of people shake their head and they nod and they look intently at you, and now they still don't know. So in terms of people's perception of what, you know, do they, mm-hmm. you know, sympathize or pity, no one really understands what people in finance do to begin with. So I haven't really felt any ire because I don't really know where to mm-hmm. place that ire.
But it's an interesting perception that if the ego has been drained out of the business, then a lot of the individuals are easier to deal with.
Yeah, they certainly. And as an entrepreneur dealing with someone from Lehman or CSFB or you know, Merrill Lynch 3 years ago, you know, where's the risk, right? I used to be working for a big bank. There was little risk and entrepreneurial. There's a lot of entrepreneurial risk, but I don't feel job risk right now. And you know, these people, you know, they have lives that are leveraged up, and they have, you know, their kind of their individual balance sheet. I feel a tremendous amount of sympathy and kind of angst thinking about them.
Andrew, thank you very much. We'll get one more in here before we go see who got inducted into the New Jersey Hall of Fame today. Those announcements just out. I know you've been sitting on the edge of your seat. Mac in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC.
Hi, how are you?
Hey, Mac.
I have got to say, someone's got to note the Freudian slip there when that guy said the industry has a lot of soul-searching to do. It's just got to be noted. I was surprised you didn't pick that up. I mean, that was a classic Freudian slip.
But
there.
You did. You called him on it. Mac, you get the last word in this segment.
Thank you, Brian.
Except to say that since this was inspired by the photo that somebody posted to our page, our Uncommon Economic Indicators page, of a truck at the Monster Truck Rally in New Jersey this weekend called The Broker, that a lot of people booed. Someone else just posted on our page. Paolo from Patterson writes, I was at the Monster Truck Jam, and the broker was a real estate broker, not a stock broker. He did perform quite poorly, though. It was too bad because I thought it was the best and most original name of all the trucks there. By the way, writes Paolo, who would have thought there'd be so many NPR listeners who went to a Monster Truck Rally? Yeah, who would have thunk it? All right, Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up in a minute, we'll stay in New Jersey and see who got inducted into the New Jersey Hall of Fame today. A lot of big names on the list and a few that may surprise you.